This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. You ready for a break from the weeks of stay-at-home orders and social distancing? We've got you covered, because on this month's Movies on the Radio, we're going to travel around the world. Laura Boys and Marsha Gordon are here to talk about movies with a strong sense of place, from the red clay of North Carolina in Bull Durham to the icy landscape of Antarctica in The Thing. In some of the movies, locations become characters like Rome in Roman Holiday. We're talking about all of them today. Laura Boys is the curator of the North Carolina Museum of Art, a Movie Divas series as well, and she is back with us. Welcome back, Laura.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Marsha Gordon, film professor at North Carolina State University and a fellow at the National Humanities Center. Hello, Marsha.
Hello, Frank and Laura.
Let me ask you what you've been doing, Laura. How you've been passing the time during this stay at home? You've been Netflixing your brains out, or what?
I've hooked up the VCR player again, so I've been really reaching back through all of the things that I've recorded. I have a huge DVD collection, and I stream as well. You need all media in order to satisfy all desires.
What? Well, tell me about the VCR. What have you got back there in the archive that really grabbed you?
So I videotaped a lot of films in those days, and then my daughter and her babysitter made up an extremely elaborate filing system, so I am instantly able to locate any film that I want that we ever taped. And I've been watching a lot of adventure films with women protagonists, and amazingly, they're often Maureen O'Hara, who was a sword-fighting pirate. She was a sword-fighting Arabian princess.
Wow.
And I've been going back through those.
Marsha, what about you? What have you been doing?
You know, it's funny. I just did a little bit of a Jacques Demy binge.
She's so much classier than I am.
And look, you know, I didn't watch it on VHS either, let me tell you. But yeah, Model Shop and Lola, one of my favorite films. And I've talked about Umbrellas of Cherbourg on this show before. Mm-hmm. So I have been escaping a little bit through the world of Jacques Demy.
Hold on, that's my favorite.
Talking about escape, you know, this idea of being transported to play. I mean, this is what Hollywood does, Marsha, and has been doing it for a while, right?
Yeah, and I mean, and not just Hollywood. So, I mean, when you think about the history of film, which was really born in the 1890s, one of the initial impulses was to transport people to other places. I mean, we, you know, up until a couple months ago, I think we've gotten very accustomed to the idea of the ease of travel, jumping on a plane or a train or in a car and going someplace. And in the 1890s, it was more complicated. So I like to show this film to my students. It's just a very typical film made by the French Lumiere brothers, the French pioneers of film, of Niagara Falls from 1897. And it's just a single shot film of majestic Niagara Falls. But imagine watching that moving water, dramatic, in 1897 or 1898, when it would have been shown anywhere in the world where you could, you know, replicate the film and actually project it. And so it was a way to show people the world.
Yeah, and really places, I mean, in most cases, place is a character in films, right? I mean, again, Laura, that's kind of what films can do best.
And a lot of times it's inadvertent. There are so many films where the most interesting thing is that they were shooting on the streets of Los Angeles in 1948, and you get to see all of these vanished places behind the actors on screen. So I always find that to be an interesting aspect of watching old movies.
Top of your... Go ahead.
There's a few early Charlie Chaplin films that are shot on the streets, such as they were, of Los Angeles. And my favorite part of watching those films is just seeing what Los Angeles looked like, you know, in 1914 or whatever. So, yeah, I love that incidental look. But let me also just add that there's also kind of an opposite impulse of, like, here's the exotic. There were also a lot of filmmakers, especially, you know, in the teens, 20s, and 30s, who were making films in people's communities and showing it to them. H. Lee Waters, who is from North Carolina, is a perfect example of that, who did movies of local people and, I would say, places, too. And that would be, like, you shoot a town, you shoot the people, and then they come back and pay to see themselves and their town on the screen. So place manifests in a lot of different ways.
Well, Laura, your pick, the 1953 film Roman Holiday. What made that get to the top of your list?
Well, I love Roman Holiday. It's a movie I've probably seen 30 times. I love it for its romance, for its location. It was the first American film that was shot entirely in Europe after World War II, and it showed such a different place than the neorealistic films that were all, you know, stolen bicycles and desperately poor people. You know, and here was a joyous view of the city. And when we went to Italy a number of years ago, we in fact had one day in Rome, just like Audrey Hepburn. And my daughter and I carefully watched the film. And then when we had our one day in Rome, we reproduced Audrey Hepburn's day in Rome, going to all of the places that she went, many of which had pictures of Audrey Hepburn from the movie right there, because it's such an important sort of benchmark for Roman tourism. And there's just something so tremendously satisfying of going to these places that you've seen in the movie and having your picture taken at the mouth of truth, as we were all lined up to do. Mm-hmm. So it's just, it's a lovely cinematic experience that we turned into a real life experience.
And you came back with both of your hands. So that's great.
Both of my hands, because I do tell the truth.
You always tell the truth. And you can't go wrong. You got a movie that stars Audrey Hepburn, Gregory Peck, and Rome.
Why don't you take a little time for yourself?
Maybe another hour.
Live dangerously. Take the whole day.
I could do some of the things I've always wanted to.
Like what?
Oh, you can't imagine. I'd like to do just whatever I like the whole day long.
Things like having a haircut, eating gelato.
Yes, and I'd like to sit at a sidewalk cafe and look in shop windows, walk in the rain, have fun, and maybe some excitement. Doesn't seem much to you, does it?
It's great. Tell you what, why don't we do all those things together?
But don't you have to work?
Work now. Today's going to be a holiday.
But you don't want to do a lot of silly things.
Don't I? First wish, one sidewalk cafe. Coming right up.
From the 1953 film Roman Holiday, starring Audrey Hepburn and Gregory Peck. Movies on the radio today. Marcia, did she step on his line? He said Angelotto, and she already said, you do so many crazy things. I think she stepped on his line.
Well, that is entirely possible. Huh. I really like the point that Laura made, though, about the use of locations in this, because if you watch Hollywood films, Hollywood got really good at building sets, right, which never look like the real thing, but we kind of accept that. So the idea of seeing Rome this way, you know, actual locations, Trevi Fountain, the Spanish Steps, et cetera. I mean, those are really memorable moments in film history where we shift from the artificial to the real and the camera's actually in the place.
And it's actual Roman geography. You can indeed, as we proved, walk to all of these places in a day and still have time to have your gelato. There are so many films that provide a false geography. It's like, you can't get from the Eiffel Tower, you know, to there, you know, just by turning around, kind of thing. And people always complain about this once they've actually visited places that movies have falsified, how you get from point A to point B.
Well, let's stay in Italy for our next film.
Hello, my name is Melanie C. I'm from Chapel Hill. My nomination for a movie that evokes place is Enchanted April. It takes place in Portofino, Italy, just after World War I, during the Roaring Twenties. It's lush, it's beautiful. It transports me to another place in time.
What are you reading about the castle in Wisteria?
What? Yes. Why?
It seems so wonderful, and it's such a miserable day.
Perhaps that's why it seems so wonderful.
No, no, it is wonderful.
Wonderful, yes, but it's not worth wasting one's time thinking about it.
Oh, no, it is. Well, why don't we? Why don't we try and get it?
Get it?
Yes. Not just say how wonderful it would be and then go back to Hampstead without doing anything about it. as we have been doing for years and years and years.
But how do you mean, get it?
Rent it, hire it, have it, the castle, the wisteria, everything.
My favorite scene is that quarter, third of the way through the movie where the women wake up in this amazing castle and they arrived in the dark and they walk outside to just incredible beauty.
From the 1991 film Enchanted, April and Marcia, this really does get to this kind of travel as wish fulfillment, doesn't it? The film itself.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been to Portofino, Italy, which is where the film is shot, I believe. But that idea that a movie can introduce you to a place, and as Laura pointed out with Rome, and then you can go there perhaps one day, or there was a time where it seemed possible, mm-hmm. because, of course, now we're all thinking about what is the future of our ability to travel and to experience things. And I mean, unfortunately, we are in a time where a lot of that is going to have to be virtual. And so it may be that these films are our access to foreign beauty for, you know, a good while.
Back to the soundstage the film industry. I'm going to take a break. I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a break right here, and then we can come back and talk some more. Marcia Gordon is a film professor at NC State and a National Humanities Center fellow. And Laura Boyes, the curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art, the film curator, and the Movie Diva series. And just ahead, more of your favorite place-based films on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, traveling the globe today through place-based films on Movies on the Radio. Marcia Gordon and Laura Boyes are talking about your favorite titles with a strong sense of place, those movies that make you feel transported. Marcia Gordon is a film professor at North Carolina State and a fellow at the National Humanities Center. Laura Boyes is curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art, the film curator, I should say, and the Movie Diva series. And let's go right back to our listeners and take a listen to some of the films that transported them.
This is Lewis Cherry from Raleigh. And I immediately thought of the movie Don't Look Now when I think of a movie that is about a place. I spent some time in Venice in the winter a few years ago, and I was really struck by the haunting sort of sounds echoing through the streets, and there were virtually no people around. And Don't Look Now is all about misidentifications and things that you think are happening and maybe it's something different. And there's a sense of being lost.
This is it, it's the Ponte Giretto.
What?
This is it.
No, I felt...
What's that, John?
Yeah, follow the real world. It's down here. Come on.
What on earth was that?
It was a cat or a rat.
This was just around the corner from where we were. I know where we are now.
So I thought it was just an amazing use of the place as a character in this haunting movie about grief and loss.
That was Lewis Cherry. I feel like I know that guy. Where have I heard that guy? Marcia Gordon's husband and Lewis Cherry talking about the film Don't Look Now. And in that film, I mean, what he's talking about, too, is the idea of reminding you. So on the one hand, there's aspiration, a place I've never been and always want to go to. And then there's having been there and bringing it all back, huh, Marcia?
Well, you know, but also in this film, what I like about this pick is that this is not about the romance of travel and like, oh my gosh, I want to go to Venice after seeing this film. It's using a place to amplify the sense of horror, psychological tension, the kind of sadness that pervades this film. And it's using it in terms of the sound of the water and just the atmosphere. And so, you know, I think that this is a really different use than Roman Holiday of a location.
Well, it's an extremely damp and dreary film. It's almost like an anti-travelogue, whereas
right.
with Enchanted April, you want to go there and have that beautiful solitude and see deeply into yourself in this kind of new situation so that you can sort of reassess your entire life in a positive way. And it's the kind of exact opposite in Don't Look Now, which is really, it's a horror movie.
Right.
In so many ways. And it's pretty scary. It's not a film that will make people want to go to Venice. There are plenty of films like that, but this is not one of them.
Well, it points to two different ideas. When we say using place as a character, you know, a lot of times I think maybe Roman Holiday is a pretty good example where it's a backdrop, right? It amplifies the theme. The theme is really the love. Remember, the story is about this love relationship that's blooming between these two in a romantic place. And so it tends to amplify and support the main idea. And in that way, it's a character. In this film, it is a character. They're acting one way and the place is acting on them independently, which is a kind of a different way of using place. And, it does show up in a couple of the picks we've got in today's show.
Well, let me just add one more thing about that. I think also in terms of the kind of accidental capturing of a location, the recent floods they've had in Venice that have been so horrific and that point to a future in which, you know, Venice is really compromised. This is a movie that captures Venice also at a certain point in 20th century history. And in 50 years, Venice may not be there the way that it is today. And so there are these kind of accidental ways in which films document places when they're shot on location.
Hey, Marsha, let's talk about your pick, Little Fugitive. Tell us about it.
Well, first off, I have to say I have been thinking about New York City a lot. And, New York and L.A., more films are set in those places that are made in the United States than any other place, no doubt in part because of the fact that they're epicenters of filmmaking. And so when I was thinking about a film that captures New York, I came to The Little Fugitive fairly quickly after thinking about 50 other films that depict New York in really interesting ways. And this is a 1953 film that is very low budget, not professional actors, shot on location, largely in Coney Island by the New York photographers Morris Engel and Ruth Orkin. And rewatching that film last week, which I did, I found very moving for a number of reasons. You're really seeing Coney Island through the eyes of a bewildered child as he basically has run away for a couple of reasons and is kind of living for a day and a night on Coney Island. And so I think the clip we're going to play is an interaction between this kid who loves cowboys and loves horses, who befriends this guy who works at one of the attractions at Coney Island where you can get on a horse and ride in a circle a couple times for, you know, a nickel or whatever.
You next, kid.
I want him to put me on.
AJ, a personal customer.
A personal customer? Well, well. What's your name?
Joey.
Good, mine's Jay. Up you go, Joey. There we are. Ready, Joey? Hey, you look like a real cowboy. So I got a saddle and a bridle on him, and I was all set. And furthermore, Kit Carson said that's the way to ride. Hey, you're heavy. Hey, that was great riding, Joey. You'll be a champ someday. No kidding, a real champ.
That's a clip from The Little Fugitive, Marsha Gordon's pick today as we look at movies about place. I think what's charming about that, too, is that it's all New York. There's these scenes of New York City in that moment, 1953, Coney Island, walking through. But his fantasy is about being out west somewhere. And there's a little bit of Montana somewhere in Coney Island that this kid can find. It's kind of cool.
That's right. And watching this last week, I was so struck. I mean, one of the things that makes New York City so wonderful is it's crowded, it's bustling. There's people everywhere. And watching that now in the context of coronavirus times and seeing the beaches packed and the rides packed, I mean, it resonates in a very haunting way as well.
Well, even the idea of what is he like, maybe a 7-year-old, but not even 5-year-old boy just wandering the streets for a day, you know, on his own. It's just that's preposterous even before this. But Laura, let's talk about places too. And you know, we talked earlier about as Marsha said, New York City and Los Angeles being the epicenter, in part because that's where the film industry was, a robust film industry at one time before changes in tax credits here in North Carolina. And this state gets represented pretty well now and then in films, right?
Not anymore.
No, not anymore. But it used to when we encouraged people to make films here and encourage that economy and those dollars to be flowing through our economy. But then they changed the rules, and now that money has fled. But there was a time when it was pretty good, right?
Yes, absolutely true. There are so many films, beginning really with Firestarter, with Drew Barrymore. There were a whole lot of television shows that were also filmed here. And, of course, our beloved Bull Durham, which is Durham's very own film, that does register a point in time when before Durham became what it was a few months ago, the Durham of empty storefronts and lonely streets and deserted downtown. That's the Durham of Bull Durham.
Yeah. And it's but other films as well. In fact, our next film takes us to the Outer Banks.
Hi, my name is Nancy Edelman. I'm from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And the movie that I want to talk about is The Peanut Butter Falcon. It takes place on the Outer Banks of North Carolina, where I'm from, and I raised my children. There's many references to the Outer Banks as well. It's about a boy who runs away from a nursing home, and it's actually played by a boy who has Down syndrome. His name is Zach Gottsagen, and he meets up with another person who's running away from his life, played by Shia LaBeouf. The name of his character is Tyler. It's a Huckleberry Finn feel-good movie. It's about treating each other with kindness and love and being respectful of each other in this difficult times.
I want to be personal wrestler, and I am a bad guy.
Why do you want to be a bad guy?
Because my family left me.
That don't make you a bad guy. Good guys get left too, Zach.
I can't be a hero because I am a Down syndrome.
What's that got to do with your heart? Who told you that?
Coach. Teachers.
Your coach? What'd your coach say?
I am retarded.
That's all right. You can't be everything. You ain't gonna be no professional basketball player. You ain't gonna dunk no basketball or be an Olympic swimmer. You sink like a stone because you're all muscle. Today when you pulled me up out that water, you almost pulled my whole arm out the socket. Most grown folk I know ain't got that kind of strength. You're strong, Zach.
Tyler.
Hmm.
Are you the good guy or a bad guy?
I don't know. What you think?
You are a good guy.
Nancy Edelman is talking about the 2019 film The Peanut Butter Falcon. We're talking to Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies. Marcia, have you seen this one?
I have seen this one, and you know, I think it's interesting to acknowledge that, you know, we talked about the H. Lee Waters and movies of local people and places in the early part of the 20th century. I think we still get that sense of pleasure from recognizing locations. I mean, in this case, you know, the Outer Banks.
And however, it was filmed in Savannah, Georgia, thanks to the North Carolina State Legislature. So
point.
Yeah, would have been shot here.
You take your inclination to recognize familiar places because they keep talking about the Outer Banks, but in fact, it's Georgia where all of our tax credits went.
Mm. Well, and I believe that's the case also. Isn't there a new, I haven't seen it yet, there's a new streaming.
Called Outer Banks, yes.
That's not shot here as well, right?
Yeah. That's right. There are other shows and movies that supposedly take place in North Carolina that are filmed in Louisiana as well, because they also have very generous tax credits at this point.
What about the movie, Laura? Have you?
Yes, go ahead. It's a heartwarming film. It's kind of old fashioned in that it does look for the goodness in everyone, regardless of whether you think that person is worthy of your notice or not. I thought it was really charming. We all watched it over Christmas and were really quite shocked at how taken we were with it.
Well, our next clip takes us to the Midwest.
Yeah, I'm Carol from Greensboro at Triad Stage, and my favorite movie that evokes the place is Breaking Away. And this movie takes place in Bloomington, Indiana, and it's really a story about a young man who's not part of a university, but his connection with biking and the university. It's really about the community that's a town and gown community, and the interplay between the students who come to study and the working class kids who don't have that opportunity.
What are you cutters doing here? Did you get lost?
No.
Well, then why don't you get lost now?
Is that him?
No. No, I don't think it is. No.
Let's get out of here.
Smart move, Shorty.
And it's really, it's a funny movie, but it also explores dreams and how they can come through.
And now this is what you have been waiting for. The winning team from Bloomington, Indiana. The winner of the Little 500, the Cutters.
Carol from Greensboro tells us about the 1979 movie Breaking Away, her favorite film of a sense of place. Laura, to what extent, because the story is a very old one, right? The little guy rises and wins the day and gets the trophy in the end. That's an old story in Hollywood. To what extent does the place matter? Does it make it even more poignant or not?
Well, in fact, this was filmed in Bloomington, Indiana. And it was a very personal story for the writer who grew up in Bloomington and participated in that little 500 bicycle race. So it has a very autobiographical kind of aspect to it, even though it was directed by Peter Yates, who did Bullet. So even the action scenes have a certain tension that maybe an ordinary small town story wouldn't. But this was also, it was a small movie, but the studio really got behind it. Apparently they sneak previewed it month after month after month to build an audience to make it into a hit, which is something that a studio would never do in a million years nowadays when opening weekend is king.
Well, let's go from Bloomington, Indiana to an island paradise.
This is Nell Steelman Whitlock in Raleigh, North Carolina. I would like to recommend The Descendants. It takes place in Hawaii. It stars George Clooney. It's all about the land and the people there, but one focuses on one family that is falling apart in its own way. There's love and loss in it, but George Clooney is able to keep his family together somewhat in. He also has to battle to protect the family land and a beautiful property. So there's sadness throughout this movie. And it's just like the parallel in the current world of the pandemic and love and loss and invisible sadness.
Look, whatever you two fought about over Christmas, you have to drop it. Grow up. You love your mother loves you.
I can't drop it.
You have to.
You really don't have a clue, do you? Dad. Dad, Mom was cheating on you. That is what we fought about. When I was home at Christmas, I caught her with a guy. It made me sick to see her near you. I went back to school thinking that that was it, that I was just done with her. I was gonna call and tell you everything and... And then the accident happened, and I was waiting until she woke up, I guess.
From the 2011 film The Descendants, starring George Clooney and Shailene Woodley. Marcia, what do you think makes this such a great place-based movie?
I actually have not seen this movie, so I cannot.
Well, then it's the clip. It's that clip that actually transports you.
Well, it was filmed on the island of Kauai in Hawaii, and... It seems like it's almost hard to believe that there would be a family that would own so much land on an island like that, that it would become a burden. But in fact, my husband's cousin married one of the old sugar families on Kauai, and their family does indeed own a huge amount of the island and finds it a tremendous burden of inheritance because, of course, they are colonial interlopers, and there's a lot of conflict over these kinds of issues now. But that doesn't alter the fact that Kauai is paradise, no matter how screwed up your family is. These terrible things are happening in the most gorgeous place imaginable, which creates a tremendous tension.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's when it's really a character, when the place is creating tension rather than simply supporting or a kind of a you know, dressing that supports. I mean, it works well, but it works better, it seems to me, as counterpoint. And we'll talk more about that on Movies on the Radio with Laura Boies and Marcia Gordon. Laura is the film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art and the Movie Diva series, Marcia film professor at North Carolina State, and a fellow at the National Humanities Center. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Put on your traveling sweats. We're going to listen to people talk about watching movies about other places. That's what we're doing today on The State of Things. Movies on the Radio this month, talking about films that make you feel transported, that have a strong sense of place. Laura Boies, Marcia Gordon are with me today, and we're going to go right into the films and find out what other people thought about great films that took them someplace else.
My name is Cameron Mitchell. I'm calling from Durham, North Carolina. And a movie that really reminds me or gives me sense of a very strong sense of place is John Carpenter's 1982 classic, The Thing. It's not a movie that you traditionally would associate with a place, although it is from the opening frame of the movie, it sets a tone of utter bleakness and utter isolation and absolute beauty. With the helicopter kind of flying in over this desolate glacier and just this expanse of whiteness. I think this movie also has a very strong sense of isolation, and it really speaks to what many of us are going through currently with the COVID-19 pandemic, and that there is this sort of unseen other or unseen presence that is sort of infecting all of us and sort of affecting how we're able to live out our lives and propagating fear and propagating worry and propagating this sort of intense sense of panic.
What do you got in mind, MacReady?
A little test. My windows. You and Palmer, cut everybody down real tight.
What for?
For your health.
Come on, let's rush him. He's not going to blow us all up. No, wait a minute. Let's do what Max says. I mean, he wasted Norris pretty quick, didn't he?
That's close enough, Clark.
He ain't tying me up.
Then I'll have to kill you, child.
Then kill me.
I mean it.
I guess you do.
Windows.
No.
You tie up Palmer over here. We're going to draw a little bit of everybody's blood.
Ooh, that's from the 1982 horror movie, The Thing. Today on Movies on the Radio's place-based films. Marcia, talk about the role place plays in that film in particular, but horror films in general.
Well, first off, Cameron, you win the prize. This is such a great pick for this show and this time, largely because it revolves around that question. How do you know if someone is infected? And the sense of utter, complete, impossible isolation. There is no leaving this place. And it's a place that so few of us have ever been, right? Raise your hands if you've been to Antarctica. Of course, I'm sure some listeners out there are raising their hands right now, but not that many. But the point being is that the film really brokers in that, as many horror films do, but many horror films take place out on the rural country road, right, where you can't, once your car is disabled, you can't get back and get help, from anyone in the civilized world. And so this is a lovely example using a really well-done horror film that is guaranteed, if you've never seen it before, to draw some gasps and screams.
And what do you think, Marcia? I mean, Laura?
Well, claustrophobia is also a location.
Yeah.
And it's a location that we're all becoming intimately familiar with, and how the isolation does allow a freedom of your mind that goes to very dark places sometimes.
Well, also, as Cameron points out, it's isolation and beauty. Antarctica, unlike other isolated locations, as you mentioned, Marcia, you ain't going nowhere, right? And nobody's coming in to save you. So there's that sense of isolation and being cut off. But then you look at the landscape. It is pristine. It is pure. It is beautiful. You are not. You're full of something bad as a human. The humans are infected and ugly, and there's stuff just bursting out of them. And then there's this landscape that says that's indifferent, that's utterly indifferent and utterly gorgeous. That's counterpoint.
Well, and,
I love my house, too, you know. Even though I'm forced to spend so much time in it.
Right.
And then the thing, it's not just the people. And what's really so brilliant about that opening sequence that Cameron referred to is that as an audience member watching it, especially for the first time, you have very strong feelings about what's happening in that opening scene. And I won't give it away in case you have not seen it, but they get transformed as you watch the film. And so it's taking the landscape, taking what we, you know, as people who have certain sympathies believe about what we're watching. And then because of this, of the circumstances of the film and this invisible kind of colonization by this creature, we're wrong.
Yeah. Well, let's hear another one.
My name is Corey Kriegmer, and I teach at the University of Iowa in Iowa City, Iowa. Ram Gopal Varma's 1998 film Satya is a gangster film. There's a tradition of those in Hindi cinema, but it's commonly seen as a turning point in the degree of realism, the degree of violence, but also in its very vivid use of Bombay as a backdrop. You get a sense of, mostly in the background, some of the wealth of Bombay, but you also get a sense of the poverty. You get sort of the high and low, and you get both of them presented fairly neutrally, almost as if this is a documentary take. But there is a sequence near the end of the film, it's one of the highlights, that takes place at Chowpatty Beach, which is right off of Marine Drive. Marine Drive is the most famous, recognizable street in all of Bombay. And this scene at the beach is important because it's a scene of violence that takes place in an extremely familiar, extremely public space. What's going on is a simultaneous political rally as well as a religious celebration. And to have violence take place in the midst of that is, you know, as powerful as a similar scene of violence taking place in a highly familiar space like Times Square or on the Champs-Élysées.
Corey Kriegmer talking about the 1998 Bollywood film Satya, shot in Mumbai, formerly known as Bombay. Well, Laura, I guess if it's a Bollywood film, we should start with you, although not quite as much singing and dancing in this one.
Well, there is still some, though. Mumbai, like Los Angeles and New York, is the center of filmmaking for India. So it shows up as background in many, many films. But Ram Gopal Varma, who's the director of this film, was really interested in showing the realism, showing the poverty that creates the crime. So this, once again, is kind of an anti-travel movie because you do not want to be in the Mumbai that this film shows, full of all of this misery and casual violence. But I went to Mumbai about a year and a half ago, specifically because I wanted to be in these spaces of these films that I so loved. And I've been very surprised in watching some of my favorite films since I got back that I now recognize these places that I've been, that they are very public and common spaces. And that gives you a sense of recognition and a commonality with filmmaking from yet another location.
Any thoughts about the contrast as well? One of the things Corey said is that it shows, you know, sort of a lot of the aspects of Mumbai.
Well, that's what India is. It's a country full of tremendous contrast, as you know. And movies had always prided themselves on their escapism, that nobody who's living this life of grinding poverty wants to spend their few rupees to see their own life reflected back at them. They want some kind of escapism. And it's only very recently that mainstream filmmakers have felt a freedom to reflect real life back on the screen and feel that there would be an audience for that.
All right, let us move on.
I'm Kurt Nolan. I'm calling from Spokane, Washington. And I'm calling about the film Lost in Translation. And the experience of going to the Shinjuku district in Tokyo is just so accurately recreated by the filmmakers in this movie. I mean, even to the point of just the bleary-eyed, delirious confusion of the main character as he arrives there.
Welcome to New Tokyo International Airport, Narita.
And looks out his taxi, that's not a taxi, looks out his limo's window and sees his own advertisement. He hasn't even shot yet on a billboard right beside him.
And with intensity. Okay?
Is that everything? I mean, it seemed like he said quite a bit more than that.
あなたの言ってることはウイスキーのことだけじゃないんだから。わかる?古い友達に会うように。優しく。ジェントリーにね、そして心から湧き上がってくるテンション、これ忘れちゃダメだよ。
Like an old friend and into the camera.
Okay.
You know, it's just it's this strange way that the film just recreates for you the exact experience of being there, the way that it kind of happens for the characters.
Talking about the 2003 film Lost in Translation, that's Kurt Nolan's favorite place-based film, and it's our topic today on Movies on the Radio. And Marcia, again, a listener who'd been there and then sees this film, and it's really evocative for them.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, I've never been to Tokyo. It's at the top of my list. But that arrival scene that Kurt talked about is just a wonderful expression of, like, first off, jet lag, which nobody likes, but which is a requirement if you're going to travel long distances, and that bleary look at the overwhelming neon wonderland of Tokyo. It really does, just in a kind of very poetic, not too long opening sequence, immerse you in kind of physical aspects of Tokyo through that moment of entering the city.
You know, but it's interesting, Laura, when Kurt explained that and said that's exactly what it is, it's kind of weirdly quiet, all these people, and know that's what you see in that opening scene. But I would have, if he hadn't told me that, I would have thought that this is some kind of poetic statement on the part of the director to take the sound out of that sequence and make me think about something. But in fact, no, that's what it's apparently, that's what it's like.
I've never been to Tokyo either, and I would classify this also as kind of an anti-travel film, because I'm not sure that the loneliness and the alienation and the overwhelming kind of culture shock that the two lead characters feel, it does really evoke the sensation of traveling to such unfamiliar places. But there's no real joy in this film.
No, it's a, well, the location is dislocation. I mean, that's,
yes,
it.
Exactly.
Everybody else is comfortable there, and you're like lost in translation.
And there's no way to become comfortable in a short period of time. There's a sequence where the Scarlett Johansson's character has some friends, and she and Bill Murray go out with their friends, and there's a sense of relief. Well, oh, at last there's going to be a place that they fit in, they feel comfortable, that something is going to make sense, that they'll have a point of reference, but no, that doesn't happen.
Let us now travel to the continent of Africa.
This is Kathy Zinn, and I live in Pittsboro, North Carolina. And the movie I have chosen for a sense of place as well as escape is Out of Africa from 1985. Well, Out of Africa is all about a real person, Karen Blixen, 13 years in Africa at the turn of the last century. She does not immediately fall in love with the land. She's there because of a marriage that she doesn't really want. She's there to run a coffee farm, but she falls in love with the people.
The Baroness von Blixen.
Baroness.
I'm sorry to know that Kenya will be losing you.
You have heard of my trouble then?
Yes, I regret it.
And do you know of my problem now?
Baroness. This land you want from us.
Will you help me, Sir Joseph?
Baroness, this really is not the time. That's quite difficult. Please.
Baroness.
Get up, Baroness. Please.
It costs me very little to beg you.
Wait. Give her a moment, please.
This land was theirs, you see. We took it, and now they've nowhere else to go.
I'll look into it. We'll do the best we can.
May I have your word, sir?
The scenes open in Africa with this gorgeous sunset going down over the field and this tremendous expansiveness. So I was watching it again today for the several time, and I was just literally transported.
1985 movie out of Africa starring Meryl Streep and Robert Redford. Laura, talk about the role that landscape plays in this film.
Well, it is a background to a very passionate romance, so that the beautiful landscape, the wildness of it, becomes wrapped up in a personal story.
Marcia, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I do think that this point, you know, kind of sums up our conversation in some ways, because there is this thread of the romantic film in a place that is using the place to kind of supplement and create the atmosphere of the romance. And then there are the films that are like the gangster films that Corey was talking about that take place in cities that are, you know, using the kind of, even if it's an artificial construct of a set, using the kind of urban atmosphere as a way to color the characters that are very unromantic. And so I think this is the kind of diversity of place and meaning that we've been talking about throughout the entire show. And one of the allures of watching these movies.
Well, let's talk about the way things have changed in real life. Marcia, your documentary, All the Possibilities, is streaming from now until this Friday as part of the virtual River Run Film Festival. Tell us more about the film and the festival.
Yeah, so this is a short film that I co-directed with Lewis Cherry, who was on the show earlier today. And it's about a Durham-based artist named Vernon Pratt and an extraordinary painting that he did in the 1980s and that was only recently exhibited at the Gregg Museum of Art at NC State. And as with every film festival that was supposed to be taking place now, they had to decide at River Run International whether they were going to go online or not happen at all. So it is online as part of a package of North Carolina film shorts. It's a 16-minute documentary, and you can find it at their website.
Well, the next time we get together, we're going to talk about drive-ins, because listen to this.
Hello there. My name is Alan, and I'm in Orange County. Here's an idea. Why not bring back drive-ins, like the drive-ins of the 50s. That way people can stay in their cars and stay isolated and still watch movies and still be together.
So that's just what we're going to do next time we're together. Meanwhile, Marcia's new documentary, All the Possibilities, streaming until Friday, May 8th, part of the virtual River Run Film Festival. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Marcia, Laura, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Frank.
Thanks.
Marcia Gordon, film professor at North Carolina State. Laura is the curator for films for the North Carolina Museum of Art and the Movie Diva series. And you're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.